Hello everyone, this is Recast the Podcast, brought to you by Recasting the Movies, a nonprofit that promotes diversity representation in media, both in front of and behind the camera. I'm Pete, producer and film fanatic on our Recasting the Movies team. In today's episode, our guest is Mike Mays, a motivational speaker who lives with autism spectrum disorder. We discuss his personal experiences living with autism and the betrayals in media. Our team then reflects on a fantastic documentary recommended by Mike called Life Animated. Welcome back to another episode. Joining me today is my Recasting the Movies colleague, Lisa, an actor and writer. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
And today our guest is Mike Mays. Mike is a motivational speaker and advocate for people who have autism spectrum disorder. Diagnosed at 18 months old with autism, Mike uses his personal experiences to inform his speeches, which includes topics such as overcoming being bullied, transitioning from school into the real world, and the impact of special education laws on people on the spectrum. He has over 10 years of experience as a motivational speaker and has been a keynote speaker for Autism Speaks, the Flutie Foundation, and for Mass Advocates for Children. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm excited to be here.
Mike, where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Marshall, Massachusetts.
Nice. Another local Bostonian.
Yes, absolutely.
A little backstory. Mike, you and Lisa had met on an acting job, was it?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you give a little context? How you guys met?
I got an email from my public speech manager, and she goes, "Hey, so there's an acting gig. Do you want to be a part of it?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" And she goes, "Email this woman, Karen." I decided to do it. Long story short, I got to UMass Boston where the scene was, and I'm waiting in the waiting room, and I'm petrified. It was the first time I ever acted in my life. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like I'm like reading through my lines, like freaking out. And then Lisa comes, and me and Lisa just talked about what we do. And then afterwards, Lisa goes up to me and she goes, "Hey, so like, I love your story. Want to be part of my podcast?" Like, yeah, absolutely.
So I just wanted to fill people in on what the project was. So we were actually part of making videos for the Institute for Community Inclusion for UMass Boston. So they were making these videos for internal use where they would use it to train people who are going to hire people from different backgrounds.
That's correct. Played an autistic person named Tommaso.
Was it something that was for internal?
Yeah, it sounded they were going to use these videos. They were going to like hire people for internal. So it was like our scenario was that Tommaso, right? He was filing. He's done filing. And so it's like, what can I do? And it's like, oh, you need to go over to this other area and pick up some more files and you can file those. And Tommaso becomes upset with that because he's not comfortable doing that. We will work with people to see what their strengths are and kind of tailor the positions to them type thing.
Yes, correct.
So Mike, so on top of acting, adding that to your resume, seems like you do a ton of other things. Can you give us a quick overview of who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. 32 years old right now. It's hard to believe I'm 32 already. I'm a high school football coach right now. I actually recently just started a new job. I work for the YMCA as a before and after school coordinator. And it's a pretty exciting job. I get to work with kids, which I love. I work for the New England Revolution as a game day coordinator. And I love sports. I love being at Gillette Stadium and be at Gillette Stadium for free. And they pay me to watch soccer. So it's great. I get to deal with the public. They ask me questions and I answer them. I love my jobs. And finally, another thing I do is I public speak, as you already said before, about what it's like to have autism and basically like what I went through. I honestly try to give parents hope because the first initial thing when parents think, oh, my kid has autism, that means that it's a bad thing. But having autism, I think, is very unique. Every autistic person is different.
So what gives you inspiration to be a public motivational speaker?
Honestly, like I said, like I feel like parents need hope. And that's number one. And number two, back when I was in high school, I was really sad. I felt alone. I was like, oh my God, like no one understands like what I'm going through. I want to be that guy. Just be like, hey, like I know exactly what you're going through. And plus now there's a lot more people on the spectrum as well. back when I was in elementary school, it was 1 in 200 something. I forget the exact ratio, but now it's like 1 in 51 kids have autism now, which is a huge jump, which is good and bad, I guess. But to me, I want the kids like not to feel alone.
And they all need more support more than ever as well, right? So
absolutely.
What are the biggest misconceptions about people living with autism?
Number one, that autistic people need a lot of help, and the fact that they can't live independently, that's probably like one of my biggest pet peeves is they say like, oh yeah, like he has autism, he's not gonna live independently. Well, I lived away from college 4 years from my parents, and I prove people wrong all the time. And the movie that we're gonna eventually talk about is about an autistic man who lives independently.
So there's a movie that you recommended our team to watch. It's called Life Animated. It's actually free on YouTube. And this film, I believe, was filmed locally in the Massachusetts area.
It was filmed in Cape Cod.
Yeah. How would you describe the film, Mike?
Basically, it's about a man who has autism. He public speaks just like I do. And he went to Three Rivers. It's like a high school / college. And basically what he did was he had an idea of creating a Disney club, and now it's like one of the most popular clubs in the school, which is like amazing just because a lot of people like think like, oh yeah, like this person has autism, he's not bright and he can't do that. So like to me, like it was very inspirational just because to me, he proved a lot of people wrong, if that makes sense.
So to provide a little more context, in the movie Life Animated, the documentary follows Owen. He's a character, he's a real person who at a young age showed signs of autism, and his parents didn't really understand what was happening. Owen wasn't really talking. I believe he had an older brother and he just wasn't vocal. And it wasn't until his parents discovered that Owen had a real deep interest in the Disney movies that were playing on their home TV. And Owen had memorized all the lines of all the characters. You know, he would talk and discuss the characters as if they were real people. Is that accurate, Mike?
Yes, that is 100% accurate.
And as he grew older, this is when Owen formed that Disney club that you had mentioned.
I wanted to add that in the beginning. So he did talk, but then he stopped talking. And when he was watching Disney movies, he would like relate it to his life. So if something happened to himself, he would say a line from one of the Disney movies that would show that he understood what was going on with himself through these movies. So when he started this club, there's like a scene in it where they talk about the movie, like, oh, what do you think this means? And relating it back to their own lives. So I thought that was a great way for people to understand how other people could be thinking and feeling. It was great that he was able to start this club.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And the thing that's funny about that movie is there's a girl that I know that's actually in that movie for a very brief, probably like 10 seconds. She was actually part of that Disney club. They showed her for like 10 seconds. It was funny. I messaged her. I was like, hey, like I saw you in that movie. And she goes, oh, that movie. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Mike, in Life Animated, what does that documentary get right? Is there any inaccuracies in that movie?
Probably the thing that's accurate is the fact that autistic people are very creative, and Owen was very creative, thinks out of the box. And when I coach football, I constantly think out of the box. I'm a totally different coach when I coach football, and a lot of the coaches look at me like, why do you do it this way? Like, one of the things I do is I really try to get to know my kids and like figure out how to motivate them. And like talk to them, trying to get to know them as a person instead of like as a football player, if that makes sense.
Mike's story about how he coaches is kind of like pretty inspirational. You had mentioned before when we had spoken that, you know, your coach had said that you weren't a good player or something. Now you coach. I mean, I guess maybe we could talk about this a little bit more later, but I just wanted to bring it up and like commend you because I feel like some other people might take that to heart, but you, on the other hand, that's not true. I can play. And now you coach it. So I think that's great.
I appreciate that. Honestly, the reason why I coach football is because I love the game of football. That's number one. And number two, I really love inspiring the younger generation, how to work as a team and how to communicate with others and stuff like that. Like, number one thing about football that I miss when I was in college was the team camaraderie. And now, like, I've been coaching since 2014, and I love being part of a team, and it's so much fun.
Do you envision coaching for a long time?
I do, 100%. To me, it's not a job, it's a hobby. And the thing that I love is the fact that the kids that I've coached in the past, like, they come up to me and they give me a hug, or they go up to me and be like, oh my God, like, that year that you coached me was my favorite year. That actually happened. I went to the varsity Marshall game, and there was a kid that I coached 3-4 years ago, and he gave me a big hug, and he goes up to me and goes, that one year that you coached me, it was probably the funnest time of my life, all because of you. I try my best not to cry. Like, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
That I can make such an impact on a young man's life.
The high school program that you coach at is pretty well respected. It actually does pretty well in the state. Do you think that kids that you coach now could become, you know, future stars, and, you know, they'll remember you?
I hope so. Absolutely. I definitely hope every kid that I coach tries to remember me at least. And I really teach them about life. And sometimes I teach them, like, hey, like, life's not fair. You have to go with the punches. Sometimes stuff is not to go your way. You just have to go with it. I know that's like a nasty thing to say. That's just life. Sometimes, as an old coach used to tell me, like, hey, you can have a bad day, but you can make an impact on that one person.
Firm believer that, you know, as young adults, the mentors that you get in your young adult life are some of the most important people that you'll ever meet. They'll end up steering you in the right direction and whatnot. Even given in, like, sports world, you hear, you know, these players who end up being in the Hall of Fame, they go to their Hall of Fame induction and they talk about all the people that they want to thank. One of those people are generally like the early coaches that they remember all those years. Tom Brady, I think, still talks about his coach at Michigan.
Yep, he does.
You make a lasting impact in a young person's life, they'll forget you.
Absolutely. That's honestly what I try to do. And I'm also a very blunt coach, too. Some kids need to hear the truth sometimes. I'm not, like, mean or anything. Like, sometimes you get to go up to a kid and be like, hey, like, I know you can do better. Reach that level that I think that you can play.
So Life Animated, as a documentary, the film shows the realistic daily struggles of those living with autism. There are scenes showing Owen, like, getting an apartment on his own, getting a job, managing relationships. He had a girlfriend, managing his relationship with his brother, who, after all these years, he's no longer living with. Are non-documentaries too sensationalist in their depiction of autism spectrum disorder? Or are documentaries actually the better suited format?
To me, I feel like documentaries are more accurate than actual movies, just because I feel that movies or TV shows kind of make autism people either look really stupid or really awkward. Probably the best example is The Good Doctor. It's about this autistic man who's in charge of this big hospital, and he's autistic, but he doesn't talk to anyone. He's very awkward. He's very smart. He's very brilliant. They're basically painting him as this genius, but, like, he doesn't really talk to anyone. Paints, like, a really bad image. Yeah, like, autistic people are very shy and not very outgoing. They're not a team player. But eventually, the Good Doctor, like, starts talking to people. He eventually gets a girlfriend or a fiance.
Is that a show that you'd recommend to even give a shot?
I personally like it.
So documentaries are the more accurate format, you'd say?
Yeah, absolutely. And as an example, like Forrest Gump, when Forrest Gump was made, like, they kind of, like, made, like, Forrest Gump look really stupid or, like, really awkward or, like, really quiet and stuff like that. But back then, they didn't really have the research they have about autism now.
Some of the most pop culture film portrayals of autistic characters have been played by actors who are not autistic. Examples are Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man in the late 80s, Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump, and Sean Penn in I Am Sam. And all of those three performances were either nominated or won Oscars for their roles. Mike, what are your thoughts on actors who aren't on the autism spectrum playing characters who are? And also, what are your thoughts about writers who aren't on the autism spectrum writing characters who are?
Like, back in the day, I probably wouldn't have had an issue, like, if it was made in between the 80s to the 90s. But, like, now, like, I feel like people have, like, a lot more research of the autism spectrum. I guarantee you probably at least 2 to 3 people, like, know at least one person with autism. I feel like there's a lot more research done about autism. Like, now I feel like there should be more obvious Just don't just be like, oh yeah, like this person's autistic. We're gonna guess how he acts.
It's okay for actors who don't have autism to play characters who are, as long as they give the respect and do the proper research into the actual character.
Right, exactly. If what offends me is when they say the R word, or when they act like the R word, that bothers me.
Do you think that actors who don't have autism playing characters who do have autism, do you think that takes away opportunities for actors who do have autism?
I do feel like there should be more people on the autism spectrum who want to act, should act, and they should do it. And people who acting like that are not autistic or being a role of an autistic person, then I feel like the role should go to an autistic person. Just because they act like right away, like it's natural.
Well, for writers, do you think that, you know, more and more stories are out there that just aren't being told?
Like, no matter what the topic is, there's always more stories that people need to know about. But that's for like anything. Just like this year, I learned about Black Lives Matter. I got educated on it like big time just because I live in a town that's like mostly white. I never knew half the stories that I heard. One of my best friends from college, he told me that one day he went to church and some cop like trying to like frame him for murder. It was horrible. I've never experienced that before in my life. I can't imagine going through that. There's always untold stories, no matter what the topic is. I feel like another big component is the parents want to like write about like what it's like the parent of children with autism. I feel like that's huge just because a lot of parents, they feel lost. They're like, oh my God, like my kid's gonna get judged. My kid's not gonna be successful. And like when a parent reads another parent's story about like what it's like to have.
Are you saying that we shouldn't only rely on autistic people to write autistic stories just because they might not get written? Fine if somebody who isn't autistic writes these stories, because then it at least puts the story out there.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's the parent saying like this is what it's like parenting gives like another parent hope, hey, I can do this too.
That's an interesting angle. I know, Mike, this is a question that you didn't have an answer for, but I think you're actually really touching upon it. You know, what other kinds of stories would be empowering to a person on the autism spectrum? What type of stories should be told?
To me, it's like small victories is like, A, like getting a job, getting a car, putting money in the bank, like stuff like that. Like to all of us, perfectly normal, but like getting your first paycheck or your first car is like a huge deal for like people on the spectrum, just because people told parents and told kids, hey, you'll never drive, or hey, like you'll never get a job, you'll never get money. Like to me, like that's...
Yeah, definitely. That's a very important perspective to have, because like it affects the kids, but it also affects everybody around them too. So how do you celebrate your victories then? Because I know that you do drive and you have multiple jobs. So are you living your best life and like celebrating and eating cake every day?
Yeah, I wish. But so what I do to celebrate is I try to hang out with my college buddies. I go out with my parents. I go out with my girlfriend, which is a nice celebration. I love my girlfriend. She's amazing. She makes me so happy. She really gives me hope. And like for the first time, like I feel like I finally have like confidence in myself. It's all because of her.
I mean, so Mike, we had kind of talked about how when you do job coaching, you kind of prepare people, you know, help them with their resumes and help them with other skills that other people might just pick up in other parts of their life. For example, just like etiquette or even just how to dress for work. In terms of dating, even in the movie Life Animated, Owen, he's a little bit inexperienced with dating, and his brother tries to help him out, but his brother is kind of like uncomfortable bringing up that kind of subject with him. That's the vibe I got, because it can be a difficult subject. You were a resource for some of these people, job searching and whatnot. How can we be supportive of people with autism when they embark on like a new adventure, such as, you know, getting a new job or...
Well, for jobs, what I learned was is take one step at a time. Just go up to them and be like, you're going to do this. Like, this is part of your job. And once they master that part, like, you bring them to the next level. And then once they get that, like, you keep reaching, like, these steps. And with a lot of these guys, like, that's what you have to do. Do baby steps with them. And, like, sometimes it's frustrating. But they can't help it at the end of the day. And
you don't know what you don't know. Like, nobody is automatically knowing of new things.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with these guys, you can't just be like, oh, here's a job, like figure out how to do it. Bye. They're going to instantly fail. With people on the spectrum, give them expectations. Be like okay, like this is what you're going to be doing today. Like, you have to write it down. A lot of people on the spectrum are visual learners. Let's just say the job is gardening. You can go up to that person and be like, hey, like water the plants. Something like that.
So I've had jobs where it was like, hey, you have on-the-job training now, and that's not good. So I'm going to say to anybody who has a boss who's kind of like, figure this out on your own, you can choose to not work there. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So Mike, so to add on to Lisa's initial question, how else can we all essentially like put our money where our mouth is and be better allies? What actions can we take today?
Number one, just be kind. Don't be judgmental. Number two, just try your best to do research about autism. And number three is like if you're autistic people, a lot of autistic people have one or two things that they're really passionate about. And trust me, they will talk your ear off. I had a bunch of clients that were like passionate about Disney. And I first started working there, like I knew a little bit about Disney, but I didn't know anything about the new movies. So like I had to like watch them brand new Disney movies. Then I'll talk to them about it. But some autistic people love trains or they like Nickelodeon movies, stuff like that. And find out what they like and talk to them about it, because that's what they like, is tell stories.
Great. I mean, I think that first number one that you said, be kind, I think everybody should just do that. But I think you're right. Like maybe we just need a little bit more patience with people who take a little bit more time to learn things, especially if they're visual or if they have to do things, if they learn things differently than, you know, the rest of us.
I couldn't agree more. And probably one of my biggest pet peeves is people who are very impatient. That's one thing that I love about the South, is that they're very patient and they take their sweet time. I feel like sometimes that people up here are constantly rushing all the time instead of enjoying the scenery, just sitting, relaxing, and trying to get to know someone.
You notice when you go into the city, like in Boston or New York City, people that are walking on the streets, it looks like a mile to run, not actually a walk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, everyone was moving at Northeast speed. It's much different than the South.
Oh, absolutely. It's a totally different world. It blows my mind. Like, every time I go there, like, people are just super chill, and they take their sweet time, and they talk to you, and you're like, oh my God, this is weird.
Thank you, Mike.
Mike, how can we reach you? So, like, if somebody wants to reach you for speaking, you prefer they reach out to you directly versus, like, your agent or whatnot?
You can either email me at mmayes9964@gmail.com, or you can contact me at mikey.mayes@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mike, for joining us today.
Thank you. I had a great time talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
We are back with our team segment. Now we have Jess, our executive director, joining Lisa and me. Say hi, Jess.
This is Jess, who's the executive director of Recasting the Movies.
We just had our segment with Mike. And we talked about his life living with autism, his efforts in helping change lives and challenging the perceptions of those living with autism, and a little bit about representation in the media. In particular, we talked about Life Animated, the documentary that Mike had recommended our team to watch.
Which is interesting. This is the first time we've asked to watch a documentary.
There are some takeaways from that movie and from Mike's conversation that I think are worthy of a discussion. So the first takeaway is giving the importance to giving light to the parents' perspective, the parents of those living with a disability. This is definitely one reason I think that Mike said that being a motivational public speaker is so important to him. And it's a reason why he thinks that stories from the parents' perspective should actually be told more in the media. Essentially, parents who have children living with a disability, they need stories to give parents hope. Having children living with a disability such as autism, spectrum disorder, can be a challenge. And those children, they need a close support system, and it begins with parents. And we need more stories to give parents hope.
I can see that. I did think when I was watching Life Animated, I was most struck by how the parents were going through it, if that makes sense. I guess back then there wasn't a ton of research maybe on autism. So for them, it felt like they were very much in the dark about what was happening to their kid. The way they described it was their kid kind of shut off one day, essentially, or like something changed and they had no idea what was going on. If I was a parent, that would terrify me.
Right? Yeah.
Especially since, because it wasn't as known, like they really couldn't do anything. They like brought him to like multiple doctors. So like that's all they could do.
Think about how comforting it would have been just for the parents to know that they weren't alone in this, right?
I think that was what made it really heartbreaking, was hearing the parents' side and just hearing them, how excited but sad and scared they were.
That's true. Even for mom group, our kids are all normal, but like sometimes moms worry, oh my gosh, when is my kid gonna talk? And I know from like a parent, some kids don't talk till 3. Having that from other parents, kids with autism, would definitely be.
And it probably is a lot more easier nowadays with the internet, and also even just in the medical field, how there's probably a lot of shared medical knowledge. So there is a lot of deep research. So there's a lot more understanding around disabilities. Definitely back then, the time when Owen was a child,
It was also interesting because for me, I have a close friend who is also on the spectrum. When he was describing how he could relate to the world as a kid, it resembled Owen's very strongly, except instead of Disney characters and Disney movies, which Owen was going through in Life Animated, or that was the medium which he understood the world best. For my close friend, his was Sonic the Hedgehog. He understood everything in relationship to Sonic, and that makes sense.
Yes, it's whatever they're exposed to. If Owen didn't watch Disney, I'm hoping that he would have found something else to relate to, but...
Fascinating was the whole part when his father was talking about how he used the Iago puppet, that he had to go through that layer in order to get to his son. Was, like, fascinating to me.
That part was so emotional.
Yeah, it was very emotional.
No, the dad was, like, crying.
But it worked.
Imagine that you had this very vibrant kid, and all of a sudden became nonverbal.
But also think about how great it must have been to be able to find a way to finally connect with them again.
If he hadn't done that, like, and he never got to speak to Owen again.
Part of it also makes me wonder, part of it could be because I don't know if I've necessarily watched a lot of movies with autism or someone on the spectrum in it. I don't remember, in my memory at least, any movies or TV shows that has a scene similar like that. Because like my feeling is that that's a lot of drama and emotions right there. And it's true. It wouldn't be a harmful, I think, representation of that experience if you were to shoot something from a parent's perspective.
It's a documentary. It's an accurate representation. I think the second takeaway from my perspective is that the film is, it's important to refute the myth that those living with disabilities can't live independently.
Right. Or have quote-unquote normal lives.
Right. In Life Animated, we see Owen, the main character. He maintains relationships. He lives on his own. He gets a job. So it's definitely possible.
Yeah, for sure. I think the way autism is depicted usually, it usually comes off way more intrusive to that person's life. I don't know how to describe that correctly, but...
I think it's also important to keep in mind, though, that there are more severe cases.
Yeah, because not everyone who's autistic is going to be like Owen, I suppose. Potentially, do you think one way to solve that would be just to have more representation, then you can have more varied representation, so that you don't only get severe cases being represented in movies or something? Because I think the problem is, I don't think most people have a lot of knowledge about autism.
Yeah, I don't think so either, because I don't know if people are still doing it now, but previously people were anti-vaccine because they didn't want the kids to get autism.
Even though there's no real link between the two, to my knowledge, none of us are on the spectrum. None of us have kids on the spectrum. I'm just curious what everyone's base knowledge of autism or being on the spectrum was before watching Life Animated and talking to Mike. Because to be honest with me, I don't think I knew much about it at all. I knew there was such a thing as a spectrum, but I didn't know much about it.
Especially when it comes to media, there's not much representation anyway. One word to learn from what they see on TV, it's definitely very limited.
Yeah, and sometimes those representations aren't accurate or sometimes downright insulting. Most recent representation of autism I can think of was like Sia's film Music, and that one got a lot of backlash for its depiction of autism.
Do you want to explain the context of what happened?
If I remember correctly, it's a film that Sia directed and stars Maddie Ziegler, and she was not on the spectrum. And if I remember correctly, people found her depiction of it rather insulting.
So Sia got the backlash, or the act?
I think she got the backlash because in interviews, I think Maddie Ziegler also expressed that she had told Sia that she was uncomfortable with depicting this role, and Sia greatly encouraged her to do it. That's the nicest way I can put it.
Was this a music video?
I think it was a full-on film. I'm pretty sure it was 2021. It's an hour and 47 minutes long. It's a feature-length film, but all I know is it's gotten horrendous reviews.
Either of you seen Queen's Gambit? The main character in it expressly say that she has autism, but she has like disorder. Whoever has it, they can see patterns in things that other people may not. So I looked it up and it is an autism. I don't think her depiction was bad. The girl, Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays her, really pretty. So when she is off-putting, it's not seen as a negative thing. Whereas I feel like if a different character played her, they'd be like, oh, what a bitch.
Can you describe what you mean by off-putting? I haven't seen it, so I'm not sure what you mean.
So she's very not friendly, and if somebody says stuff to her, it's like she gives like blunt answers. It feels like a lot of the times the people who are on the receiving end of this see this as her flirting or quirky personality trait or something. If somebody else was doing this, I don't think this would be the reaction that they would have.
It would also depend on whether or not that's an accurate representation of the disorder that she does have. Because I can't currently tell whether or not that'd be an accurate representation from the description given. Because I feel like no matter whether or not she's played by a very beautiful actress or not, I think the problem would be whether or not the depiction is accurate.
I think she got nominated, maybe even won something for it.
You also have to keep in mind, though, like, even if she is nominated by, or, like, wins some award, the people nominating her and or giving her these awards are not necessarily knowledgeable about being on the spectrum themselves, so they could be awarding her based on some perception they have.
It does make sense.
I don't think I knew a lot going in to watch animated, what that experience was like, and I feel like I learned a lot through watching that documentary. But if I didn't watch that documentary, it'd be hard for me to watch something and be like, oh yeah, that's totally what autism is like. I would just be like, wow, this lady's acting is really interesting.
So in talking about representation in movies, there's an online content creator. Her name is Annie Segarra. I hope I pronounced her last name right. She's an advocate for disability rights. And I came across an article that she had written. And there's a quote in the article that says, mainstream movie characters with disabilities are either portrayed as being tragic and depressed, or they exist only to further the narrative of a typically able-bodied main character. It actually got me thinking, how many examples is that true?
I think that was also a criticism leveled at that music film, because even though the character is named Music, the one who is on the spectrum, I think I remember reading reviews that were criticizing it for focusing mostly on her older sister, who has to take care of Music, who's played by Kate Hudson, who is an able-bodied person. Could be very accurate.
One example that Annie had put in the article is a movie called The Ringer. I had seen parts of it a long time ago. This movie came out 15 years ago in 2006. Essentially, the story is about an able-bodied man played by Johnny Knoxville, from MTV Jackass, infamy. And in the movie, Johnny Knoxville's character has a friend who suffers this horrific accident where something happens to his hand. And his friend doesn't have health insurance, and Johnny Knoxville's character doesn't have money to help pay for any medical procedure. So Johnny Knoxville's character, he has an uncle that somehow convinces him to enter into the Special Olympics under the guise of having a developmental disability so that he can compete in the competition and essentially win money for his friend. There's probably so many red flags already just even explaining this.
Is this a comedy?
It's a comedy. However, so the story, this is probably a huge spoiler. Johnny Knoxville's character essentially gets caught. However, he is asked to stay and keep the guys going, keep the pretending going by his fellow competitors. The way that the story sets it up is that there's another person in the Special Olympics who's like a super arrogant character. He always wins. And everyone else hates him. And they can never beat him. Now that Johnny Knoxville is competing and he's able-bodied, he can win flat out. But he can only do it under the guise of this thing that he's going with. So Johnny Knoxville's character essentially gets convinced to stay by these other people that he's competing with. And he eventually befriends them. And all these other characters are played by actors with disabilities. And they have their own separate side story arcs. and they're incredibly genuine. Although it wasn't great overall, it has a pretty low Rotten Tomato score. It actually did get praised for its portrayal of characters with disabilities. And there was, over 100 small roles in the movie that were all either played by or contributed by people with disabilities. It's such a strange premise. It probably did fail because how can you market that? Especially 15 years ago, right? You know, behind the scenes, you know, after it did come out, there were good things said about it. So I thought that was pretty surprising.
Makes me want to watch it, though.
I want to watch it, but I'm, like, reluctant.
How come, though?
I'm just curious how they would portray these stories is all. I feel like it's possible the entire movie overall is, like, not great. I'm just curious how these characters are portrayed. Yeah, because I feel like the idea that these characters are actually played by actors with disabilities is really significant. Because I think a lot of times these characters that do have some kind of disability are not played by people with disabilities. They're played by able-bodied actors. And I think a lot of times there's a lot of debate about whether or not that's okay.
And also these characters in The Ringer, they weren't portrayed as...
Tragic, it sounds like.
Tragic, and they weren't at the butt end of jokes. They actually had genuine storylines.
That's really nice.
And you said there were how many people?
The actual main supporting roles, I want to say there was at least maybe 2 or 3. But outside of that, even the small roles in the movie, it could be like people in the background, non-speaking roles, or extras. They were played by actors with disabilities.
Was this movie received by like people in the audience who had disabilities? That makes sense. I feel like in order to have so many people play so many roles, they must have reached out to somebody, gained some sort of approval.
The director is the Farrelly brothers. Peter Farrelly is actually heavily involved in the Best Buddies program. So I think that he had a lot of connections.
That underlines something really important then, right? Even if you are a director who is able-bodied, it's really important to have someone who at least is partially in that world or is somewhat connected to it so that you can have these genuine storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Someone with like firsthand experience, I guess.
Another example is X-Men is Marvel's comics family, and they are mutants who essentially are genetically enhanced. And they get outcasted by society because they are different. And there's many storylines throughout the years of many X-Men stories. They've been around since the 60s, so there's many storylines. But in one of the more recent movies, I think it was X-Men 2 or 3, one of the characters, Storm, she says, "They can't cure us. You want to know why? Because there's nothing to cure. Nothing is wrong with you or any of us."
X-Men has always been really good being a metaphor for people who have been marginalized, right?
Isn't that why they were created? To kind of show people that we shouldn't be afraid of other groups of people?
The one theory I've heard more commonly is that the X-Men were supposed to be a metaphor for people in the LGBTQ community because, you know, being born a certain way and then people getting cast out from their families because of it.
I heard it was like racism.
I feel like racism might be a little difficult only because it's generally speaking, if you are of a different race, your parents wouldn't cast you out because of it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But I think a lot of times it was supposed to be a metaphor for being in the LGBTQ community. That's what I've heard more of. However, I could also see how that would work for potentially having a disability as a metaphor for being, you're fine the way you are.
In the context of X-Men and being a superhero, it's fascinating that, you know, those who are different are actually
celebrated. They're heroes.
Their disability is what allows them to do great things.
They're also given a complex life because not all of them are good, right? So you have the propensity to have your Magneto and also your Professor X, who is also himself sometimes not a good person. So I think it definitely gives a lot more inner life to that idea.
These characters are so complex too. You have Professor X, as you said, who is probably one of the most strongest mind mutants in their whole universe. And yet he is a paraplegic and he's the main character. He's one of the main characters. So I find that fascinating as well, that you might have one disability, but you can also be extremely
powerful.
Yeah, powerful in other ways.
I think that's why X-Men have been so good at enduring so much over time. There's a lot you can do with characters like that, with that kind of premise.
Yeah, I mean, especially since it hasn't changed much, right? All these years. Another example, these are probably a few smaller ones. James Cameron's Avatar in 2009, if you remember that story, the main character is a military vet who is paralyzed. And he goes through this project, this job, where he undergoes the Avatar program, where his mind is transferred into this big blued alien being, but he can control that body.
Yeah, he can walk.
Exactly. He can walk. And first things he mentioned is that he's free now. Like, he can actually run and he can actually walk. But I think there's some gray area that's a little bit troublesome, where the betrayal that someone is only free once they are freed from their disability, I think that's a little bit troublesome. Does that make sense?
Also, didn't his character walk in the beginning of his life?
He did.
It's hard because I feel like, oh, like he has experienced it. So therefore, he's going back to his original state, but his disability is permanent in real life. So yeah, that makes sense what you're saying.
Well, I do want to talk about actors, the representation. I guess, like, in terms of having able-bodied actors play actors with disability, I do think that it's probably difficult on the actors who do have disabilities to see that happening over and over again, because I'm sure there aren't a ton of roles for that. And on top of that, they get played by these people often in turns to get them to win big prizes, right? So I feel like a lot of times roles with disabilities end up giving people Oscars.
Did you know that you could also gain or lose weight and get an Oscar for that too?
Or like playing LGBTQ characters. It's always something like this, I feel like. I can only imagine that it's frustrating if you're an actor who's trying to make it and you just see someone else keep winning these awards who doesn't have that experience.
If you want to even go further than that, things like the Oscars are awarded by committee. Who out of that committee also has a disability?
Or has an understanding of it even.
Right. So not only will you be seeing actors who don't have a disability being celebrated, they're being awarded by other people who don't have an understanding.
That must be so frustrating.
Oscars, was it this year or last year, didn't decide that the whole system was problematic?
That was the Golden Globes that you're thinking about.
Okay, so yes, for race, but also doesn't that apply across these situations?
It does.
It does, but I don't think they were thinking that when they changed things.
So they're going to fix it for race and nothing else?
I think people are mostly worried about race for the Oscars, at least.
That's another thing, right? Those who have a disability are an invisible, underrepresented group. When we talk about diversity in media, race is probably the first thing that we think about, right?
Yeah, followed by LGBTQ probably, because those are two very loud groups. And then, unfortunately, I do think a lot of times we forget about people with disabilities as another group of people who need better representation. That's why I was, like, really excited to be able to have Mike on our show. We just don't get to hear about this much. Like, popular media.
But it also makes me wonder, right? Are there a lot of actors who are disabled? Because if there's not a lot, then
I feel like this is a chicken and egg situation. That makes sense.
Yeah, it totally is.
This is a question that we can ask for any underrepresented group. Are there enough in the pool to select from, and or are there enough stories for them to act in?
Yeah, because the question is, are there enough people? But also at the same time, are we thinking that there's not enough people because there hasn't been a lot of stories out there for them, right? I can't say for sure whether or not there aren't that many people out there who have disabilities and want to be actors. I can't tell, because there's been so much gatekeeping that's kind of hard to tell.
Could actors with disabilities, like, theoretically, couldn't they just audition for any role and then it would just be tailored to them?
They could. I think it would depend on how severe their condition is, and that makes sense. If they're perfectly functioning, then it should be fine, I would think.
I think there's such a variety of stories that can be told within this area that
I think the hard part is that they have to be written, right? Or somebody has to tell the story. And if we're saying if you don't have this disability, then you're not eligible to write this story, then we're kind of not giving those stories a chance. It is like a chicken and egg thing, because we want that representation, but we also want proper representation.
I'd be willing to venture that definitely cannot speak to the entire community of people who have disabilities as an able-bodied person. I would venture to say that potentially you could approach it the way you would approach topics on specific cultures or races. You might be able to have someone who's not in that community, if they were well-informed, did their research, and had a consultant or some way in, just like the guy who directed The Ringers, because he was an able-bodied person. Like, I think if you had enough contact or research or could talk to people about it and really treated these stories with respect, it could work.
But then it also kind of requires a lot of extra work, especially opening up all roles for actors with disabilities to audition for. I just feel like it has to be written for a specific person in that case. Yes, we would have to have a consultant or some other person on set to be able to kind of accurately portray, to make sure that portrayal is legit. But then if somebody wanted to write a thing with somebody with a disability, then, you know, there's all this extra steps to go through. And then do we necessarily want it to be like about this disability, or is it just like, oh, like this person just happens to have this disability, but it's not like a storyline or anything?
Certainly this is the same discussion we have about race, right?
Yeah.
Do we want all stories about race?
You know, if there's like an Asian person, you don't have to explain.
That's the difference between potentially something like Crazy Rich Asians and To All the Boys, whereas Crazy Rich Asians, it was very heavily like, this is about Asian people and an identity. And then To All the Boys, the main character being half Asian, I guess, wasn't super important, but not that important. That makes sense. Like, it wasn't like the whole point of that story.
I didn't think it was important at all.
It kind of came into play in later movies when she started talking about how her mom was like Korean, and then they went to Korea in the third movie. It'd be nice to see some stories of where you have characters with disabilities where that's not the entire point. Just how it's like, it'd be nice if there were movies about characters with disabilities where it's not super tragic.
Right. It doesn't have to be a super tragic or depressed story or character.
Have you guys seen Stranger Things?
No.
Mm-hmm.
One of the character, he like doesn't have any teeth, and they threw a line in there in the beginning, and that was just it.
And of course, I don't think it makes sense to completely ignore the fact that there's something there, but it doesn't just have to be the whole crux of the story. It's for it to be powerful representation still. If I've seen something like that before, though, and having trouble, having a movie where there is a significant character who has some kind of disability, but then you don't really focus on it, I feel like the closest I can think of is Sherlock from BBC Sherlock. That whole story does not hinge on the fact that he might be on the spectrum. It's more like, oh my gosh, his brilliant mind and also his mystery solving skills.
I've not watched this, so why do people think he might be on the spectrum?
He definitely says that he has some kind of antisocial disorder, but I think it's a combination of that and also the fact that he's kind of like socially awkward. He doesn't really seem to be able to read people sometimes or read situations correctly. Super high functioning.
Yeah, he's socially awkward, but he's also super brilliant. He's essentially a police detective, and he can like solve crimes really, really fast.
Well, that would be a troubling stereotype, wouldn't it? You're autistic, therefore you are Sherlock Holmes.
Right, and that's definitely not the case.
I think on Criminal Minds, there's this guy on, he has like photographic memory, and I don't know if they ever said he was on the spectrum or not. I feel like he's more of like thing that they use to kind of just push the plot forward. Instead of having to research stuff, he just randomly knows.
Solve plot holes, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, that reminds me of this crime from blah, 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 blah. It makes the show go faster.
To me, at least, there might be some characters who, not secretly on the spectrum, just not very obvious, because Sherlock Holmes is a major figure in media. He's had so many adaptations, but I think people don't necessarily think of him as someone on the spectrum. So there could be more representation out there than we know, even.
I just looked it up. Although it is suggested by other people within and outside of the team that Spencer Reed is autistic, is never confirmed. He is socially awkward and has a hard time dealing with his emotions. So that's kind of bad, too, because it's like, oh, if you're socially awkward, then people might think you have autism.
I do think it's one of the parts that people use to not diagnose but suggest that you're on the spectrum is the lack of social cues. I think having proper representation for people on the spectrum is really another part of the spectrum includes like people with Asperger's, and like sometimes that gets caught up with violence or school shooters, even though there's no link. I think it's because of media portrayals that sometimes people have that impression, and obviously that's really damaging for anyone who has Asperger's. So therefore, it's like, I do think all this needs to be handled quite delicately. Well, I would say that my final thoughts are, if you have the chance, definitely watch that Life Animated documentary. I think it's definitely very eye-opening. It's a fun watch, in a way. Like, be really emotional. So if you're okay with something hitting you in the feels, would recommend. So I think speaks to the strength of the human condition, both on Owen's part, but also his parents, for really believing in him and trying to be there for their son. So I think that's really important. But also, once you've watched that, I think it's good to interrogate how you perceive people depicted on screen. Because just like with any group that's not in the greater majority, you need not only more representation, but varied representation. And I think what we're learning here is that there isn't enough for people with autism or people with disabilities in general.
Also, like Mike had mentioned that I think he said 1 in 53 people have autism. That is a lot. So I feel like there could be people, is this diagnosed though? Because that's also...
That's a problem. I feel like a lot of people might think they have no contact with this world, but I feel like they most likely do. They just don't know.
Yeah, and if they don't know, then...
They won't advocate for it.
But also, it means that we don't know. So they're just like regular people on TV.
That is a staggering amount of people. And as I mentioned before, it probably means that everyone here has had some contact with either someone with autism, wherever they are on the spectrum. And that's the thing, is that there's such a varied way it could manifest, or varied way you could experience it, that I think it's hard to really pinpoint.
Okay, so say this statistic is fact, then we all know more than like 53 people, like one person for every 53. So you might not even know that they have autism. How can we advocate for a group that we...
Yeah, at the minimum, recognizing that the possibility that they could be in your community, they could be in your network, and to just give them the same respect as you do as anyone else. How are we supposed to be united as a community if we can't get along with people who are different than us?
Yes, I agree. You never know what people's experiences are going through, or like what kind of experience they have. And so you need to treat everyone with a certain amount of empathy and kind of like just respect, so that you know that everyone's experience should be worthy to talk about in media. And you don't have to be a tragic figure with severe case of autism to be depicted. As long as you are a human and you have a human experience and you have a story, then why not? Even if we can't name one person for every 53 people, as Lisa says, then that means maybe we should pay a little bit more attention.
And that's our episode. If you like what you've heard, please follow Recasting the Movies on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Links will be in the description. Until next time, have a great day, everyone.